Well, hello and welcome to the Archaeology News Weekly. I am, of course, your host, David Connolly. Glad to be back with you again. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and so to view details on each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. So let's start with 6,000-year-old findings discovered in southern China, before lice DNA shows how we wore clothes 170,000 years ago. A Mesolithic wooden structure is found in London on the Thames foreshore, and there's a lecture about recent work at Marten Henge. The plans for the Tasmanian Bridge over the ancient site move ahead, and they're recovering ancient DNA again from Homo floresiensis teeth. That's a hobbit to you and I. A large 5,000-year-old site is discovered in Iran, and there's a new book about prehistoric Cumbria. Cretan tools point to 130,000-year-old sea travel, and to finish this news, we end up with the Man Hopewell legacy in Indiana. Remember, of course, you can be listening to all of this on the Stone Pages Archaeo News app, as well as keeping up with the news as it happens. So, I apologise for my rather husky voice today, as I've got what we term man flu, though to the rest of the world that's just called a common cold. So, during excavations at the Lao Hodun site in southern China, archaeologists have discovered the terracotta and painted pottery culture, which flourished around 4000 BCE. An important collection of late Neolithic remains and items were discovered in the dig, located in the middle of a rice paddy field. The excavation team leader stated that in the lower layers of the site, where the terracotta pottery culture relics were found, they unearthed stoneware and hatchets, add stone ploughs and stone walls, as well as, fortunately for them, some pottery. The items have been preliminarily estimated to be around 6,000 years old. The archaeologists also unearthed a large table dated between 4 to 5,000 years ago, which is probably a table for sacrifice. Don't you just love a table for sacrifice? It was mounded by yellow clay of high purity with an area of 3,000 square metres. As if that weren't enough, they also went on to find 114 tombs and the architectural ruins made from red, scorched earth. Whatever that is, of course. In Florida, a new University of Florida study following the evolution of lice shows that modern humans started wearing clothes around 170,000 years ago, a technology which enabled them to successfully migrate out of Africa. Principal investigator David Reed, associate curator of mammals at the Florida Museum of Natural History on the University of Florida campus, studies lice in modern humans to better understand human evolution and migration patterns. His latest five-year study used DNA sequencing to calculate when clothing lice first began to diverge genetically from human head lice. He knows that body lice almost certainly didn't exist until clothing came about in humans, so he uses that information to pinpoint when humans might have first started wearing clothing. The data shows modern humans started wearing these clothes around 70,000 years before migrating into colder climates and higher latitudes, which began around 100,000 years ago. This date would be virtually impossible to determine using only the archaeological data, because early clothing would not survive on an archaeological site. The study also shows humans started wearing clothes well after they lost their body hair, which genetic skin coloration research pinpoints at around 1 million years ago, meaning humans spent a considerable amount of time without body hair and without clothing. Brr, that might not have been a pretty sight either. Anyway, lice are studied because, unlike most other parasites, they're stranded on lineages of hosts over long periods of evolutionary time. The relationship allows scientists to learn about evolutionary changes in the host based upon the changes in the parasite. A study of clothing lice in 2003 by a geneticist at Max Planck Institute in Germany estimated humans began wearing clothes around 107,000 years ago, but this new research includes additional data and calculation methods better suited for the question. The new result from this lice study is an unexpectedly early date for clothing, much older than the earlier solid archaeological evidence. But it makes sense, according to Ian Gilligan, lecturer of School of Archaeology and Anthropology at the Australian National University. He believes that modern humans probably started wearing clothes on a regular basis to keep warm when they were first exposed to ice age conditions. Who would have thought that lice would play part of such an important role in history? You just never know what or where is going to change our archaeological knowledge. And I can tell you, on a personal note, after working in Turkey, that lice do definitely like getting into your clothing. I also remember, and I'm not going to name names here, but it's all standing around, the entire archaeological team being deloused in the main hall. Again, not a pretty sight. Now, blanking that from your mind, we'll now move across the pond. Well, not in my case, of course, to the oldest wooden structure ever found on the Thames River. Timbers over 6,500 years old have been discovered buried in the silt below the windows of the British Security Service's headquarters at Vauxhall in South London. The archaeologists who uncovered the six hefty timber piles had to explain to the security services what exactly they were up to when armed police turned up when they were spotted pottering about in the mud. I love that, pottering about, armed only with tripods, cameras and measuring equipment, not, as one spectator had apparently reported, shoulder-mounted rocket launchers. The timbers, partly scoured bare by erosion of the riverbed, were discovered during exceptionally low tides last February, but carbon dating work has only recently been completed, proving that the trees were felled between 4790 and 4490 BCE during the Mesolithic period. Although the site is now exposed only at the lowest tides, the ancient Thames was at that time narrower and deeper. Gustav Milne, the archaeologist who leads the Thames discovery programme, believes that 7,000 years ago, these timbers would have been built on dry land, possibly at the highest point of a small island. Structures of Mesolithic date are incredibly rare anywhere in Britain. The find is very interesting because in the Mesolithic period, the people were nomadic hunter-gatherers living in temporary camps, not at all given to building substantial structures like this. At the moment, however, there are not enough timbers to give any idea of alignment. It's possible the timbers could have supported a substantial platform, which some form of domestic structure or dwelling was created upon. Kept secret until it could be fully recorded and investigated, the site is located at the confluence of the rivers Ephra and the Thames. Near the timbers, late Mesolithic stone tools, including a fine tranchet adze, which is a woodworking tool, were also discovered, as well as a slightly later Neolithic pottery of two distinct types. The area may have been a significantly named place, continuing through centuries or even millennia. It's only 600 metres downstream from the Bronze Age timbers that were found to be part of either a bridge or a jetty from around about 1500 BCE. These hit the headlines back in 1990s. Still in the speculative stage, there may be have been a ford. It may have been a religious site, or it may have just been a very rich hunting ground, but it was clearly a memorable place. The site is being affected by the scour created by the twice daily tides and the growing river traffic. The remains are also threatened by a planned riverside development, including a much-needed combined sewer outflow, which will pass metres from the timbers. A major research project is now underway. I'm actually lucky enough to live only a few miles from one of the earliest houses in Scotland, at a place called Dunbar, where, before quarrying work took place, a team of archaeologists from AOC were able to actually find this incredible Mesolithic house, which really changed our perceptions about what they were doing, that they actually did have semi-permanent settlement. Staying in the UK, a lecture by archaeologist Jim Leary about the excavations at Marden in 2010 and the discovery of an extraordinarily well-preserved Neolithic building will be held on Saturday the 5th of February at the Wiltshire Heritage Museum. The summer of 2010 saw excavations at one of the largest Neolithic henge monuments in Britain, named Marden, located in the heart of the Vale of Pusey between Stonehenge and Avebury. It doesn't have any surviving stone settings, but its sheer size is astounding. The excavation was the culmination of a two-year multidisciplinary project and provided evidence for a now-demolished mound, said to be the second largest in Wiltshire after Silbury Hill. More remarkable was the discovery of an extraordinarily well-preserved Neolithic building, undoubtedly one of the best preserved in Britain outside Orkney. This lecture will discuss the findings from the project and explore some reasons as to why it was constructed and what it could be used for. Mr. Leary was very involved with the excavations at Marden Henge and also those at Silbury Hill. He's the co-author of the new book, The Story of Silbury Hill, plug plug, Anyway, this Saturday afternoon lecture starts at 2:30 p.m. and lasts for approximately 1 hour. Booking is recommended, so if you want to find out what to do, go to our website at stonepages.com for all the phone and email information. Now, unfortunately, the Government of Australia, State of Tasmania, is moving ahead with plans to build a bridge straight through an Aboriginal site, where archaeologists estimate that there are more than 3 million artefacts dating back 40,000 years. The tools, stones and spear tips found there represent the oldest evidence of human habitation in the southern hemisphere of Tasmania, but the Tasmanian government is pressing ahead with plans to build a bridge, part of a new four-lane highway across the river. The government claims the construction will not threaten the riverbank's hidden riches, but Aboriginal leader Michael Mansell has labelled the project cultural vandalism. The archaeologist who led the dig, Rob Patton, wrote that the site has a potential to give us a glimpse into an unknown part of world history and the spread of Homo sapiens across the earth. The Tasmanian government says it has examined 8 alternative routes, but none are viable. Well, you can actually find out more and get both sides of the story at the Past Horizons website, www.pasthorizons.com, where we have a rather in-depth look into this whole project. Looking, we also have videos, but there is also a direct links to Rob Patton's initial report. So it's well worth actually looking at this whole story. In another part of Australia, however, scientists are planning to attempt to extract DNA from the hobbit, Homo floresiensis, the 1 meter tall, extinct, distant relative to the modern human that was unearthed in Indonesia following a study that suggests problems in standard sampling methods in ancient DNA research could have thwarted previous efforts. Geneticists at the Australian Centre for Ancient DNA, ACAD, at the University of Adelaide, hope to recover DNA from a roughly 18,000-year-old Homo floresiensis tooth, which was excavated in 2009 on the Indonesian island of Flores. The premolar has been kept cold and has been handled as little as possible to prevent contamination with modern DNA, but little, if any, of the ancient DNA is likely to have survived the heat and moisture of the tropics, and any that may have survived could be highly fragmented. 5 years ago, two teams attempted to recover DNA from another floresiensis tooth excavated in 2003. Both attempts failed. If, however, the DNA can be extracted, comparing its sequence to that of another species could settle disputes over classification. For instance, Peter Brown, a paleoanthropologist at the University of New England, Armidale, Australia, who described and named the species in 2001, is rethinking his initial classification. At first, he put the species as the human genus Homo, but he now suspects that the hobbit's ancestors left Africa before Homo evolved, so the species could belong to a different or new genus. A team led by Christina Adler, a geneticist at ACAD, compared the impacts of various sampling techniques on DNA from the mitochondria of the 40 human species from around the world, which had been dated up to 7,500 years old. Most genetics research on ancient teeth has focused on the inner tooth tissue, the dentine, but Adler's team has found that the cementum, the coating of the root, was a richer source of DNA. Her team found also that the heat generated at standard drill speeds of more than 1,000 revolutions per minute actually destroys DNA rapidly, causing yields to be up to 30 times lower than from samples pulverized by hand in a mill. Reducing the drill speed to only 100 RPM alleviated that problem. Matthew Collins, a specialist in ancient protein analysis who is based at the University of York, says that Adler's team results would help to ensure that they will minimise the destruction of molecules during sampling of precious fossils and potentially enable us to reach even further back in time to recover sequence information. However, he's pessimistic about the chances of getting usable DNA out of Homo floresiensis, saying that the molecules are probably far too fragmented owing to high temperatures at the excavation site. But the ACAD scientists think it's worth making an attempt on the tooth, and they will target the cementum in their next attempt. A team of archaeologists working on Bam Riverside in Kerman province in Iran have recently unearthed ruins of a large ancient site which is believed to belong to a 5,000-year-old civilization. The site was discovered while excavating for a construction project in the region and, unfortunately, part of the site was damaged during this. But, based on the artifacts unearthed there, the site was one of the early places of human habitation, or at least civilization, in Iran. The team has also discovered a number of pieces of intact pottery. A study of the artifacts suggests the use of the potter's wheel was not yet common at the site. Two styles of burial, one for a man and another for a woman, have been identified at two cemeteries discovered on the site. One of the bodies was buried in a fetal position and the other lying face up. The bodies have been buried with various artifacts. A seashell containing chromatic material used for women's cosmetics was found beside one of the bodies. Let's hope, in fact, that was one of the women's bodies. Anyway, heading back to the UK, Dr. David Barraclough, a fellow in archaeology, has written a book which sets out to delve into the secrets of Cumbria's prehistoric past. He's pulled together decades of research to come up with a new interpretation about how ancient Cumbrians lived and why they built some of the most impressive stone monuments in England. According to Dr. Barraclough, patterns and marks carved into some of the ancient Cumbrian stones, such as Long Meg, could have originally been map symbols to guide people from valley to valley. This early rock art eventually was used to chart the movement of the sun and moon and rituals associated with the passing of life and death. His book, Prehistoric Cumbria, also suggests that thousands of years ago the Langdale Valley was a centre of professional axehead production, which partly finished products were manufactured for both local and export trade, overseen by an organised group. He reveals that the axe heads, which were finished by polishing in lowland Cumbria, have been found in excavations as far away as Yorkshire and the Thames Valley. Dr. Barraclough writes also that the Bronze Age, the area was a net importer of a range of manufactured artefacts, many of which were deliberately thrown into bogs and rivers, a practice known as deposition. Particular locations were selected time after time for such of actions, from the Neolithic to the end of the Bronze Age. The repeated use of the same places must have been deliberate. Such places were obviously meaningful and imbued with a memory. He suggests that the depositing imported artifacts in bogs and rivers was a compelling way to realign a foreign idea and to make alien ambiguous items acceptable at home. Now, in Greece, archaeologists on the island of Crete have discovered a set of tools they thought prove that man sailed to the sea tens of thousands of years earlier than previously has been thought. A Greek culture ministry statement said experts from Greece and the US have found rough axes and other tools thought to be between 130 to 700,000 years old close to shelters on the island's south coast. Whoever made these tools must have travelled there by sea at a distance of at least 40 miles. The results of the survey not only provide evidence of sea voyages in the Mediterranean tens of thousands of years earlier than we are aware of, but also change our understanding of early hominids' cognitive abilities, the ministry statement said. The previous earliest evidence of sea travel was 60,000 years ago, so the findings upset the current view that human ancestors migrated to Europe from Africa by land alone. The tools were found during a survey of caves and rock shelters near the village of Plakias, by archaeologists from the American School of Classical Studies and the Culture Ministry itself. Such rough stone implements are associated with Heidelberg man and Homo erectus, extinct precursors of the modern human race, which evolved from Africa around 200,000 years ago. This is the first proof of early Stone Age presence in Crete. The team of archaeologists has applied for permission to conduct a more thorough excavation of the area, which Greek authorities are expected to approve later this year. And again, if you pop along to Pastor Risen's and go to the news section, you'll be able to see some cracking photographs that we've managed to procure of the site, the team, and the tools. And finally, the Mann site in Evansville, Indiana, USA, boasts around 20 mounds built by the Hopewell tradition, a way of life that flourished in eastern and midwestern US nearly 2,000 years ago. Michelle Greenan, an archaeologist and curator at the Indiana State Museum, says that what you see at the site are a complex of earthen structures that were very purposefully and very specifically built along this cultural landscape. There's probably 20, maybe even more mounds, earthen architectural features that were built for various purposes, like ceremonies or burials. Two of the site's earthen structures are amongst the biggest mounds built anywhere by the Hopewell. An exhibit of artefacts from the Hopewell site is on display at the Angels Mound State Historic Site in Evansville through to January the 14th. The exhibition is entitled Cherished Possessions, the Man Hopewell Legacy of Indiana. An amateur archaeologist, Charlie Lacer, began walking the Mann fields in the 1950s, collecting what he found along the way. 2 years ago, he donated, and again, this makes me choke, 40,000 artifacts to the Indiana State Museum. 400 of these pieces are now on display for the first time ever. Clay figurines discovered on the Mann Hopewell site show faces with slanted eyes, which were not a Hopewell feature. Some believe the figurines show a connection between Indiana and Central or South America. The discovery of an incisor teeth in general, from grizzly bears, which are also not native to Indiana, shows that Hopewell residents of the Mann site had contact with the North American West, where grizzly bears were more common. Jaguars and panthers are not also from Indiana, but they show up at the Mann Hopewell site as beautifully detailed carving. The site is bigger than its more famous Hopewell counterparts in Ohio, and it's filled with even more exotic material like obsidian glass that has been traced to the Yellowstone Valley in Wyoming. There's a theory out there now that instead of being trade items, these items were actually being collected by people from the site on a rite of passage trip that they were taking out to the West. It would have been something big if you killed a grizzly bear and then bring the teeth back to Indiana. I should say so. I would prefer just bringing back a t-shirt myself. In 2006, researcher Stefan Pettersson from the archaeological version did the archaeological version of an MRI scan on 100 acres of the site. Whenever his equipment detected an archaeological feature, it would show up on his geophysical scan. He's now managed to map upwards of 8,000 archaeological features. But there might be also more remarkable discoveries still to be found. Scientists are starting tests on what looks like evidence of lead smelting, a practice that, until now, was only ever seen in North America after the arrival of the French, 1,000 years after the Hopewell. Lead smelting is just one of the many questions archaeologists will be targeting in upcoming digs that they hope will clear up at least a few of the Mann Hopewell site's mysteries. This may just turn out to be one of the most important archaeological sites in North America yet. Well, we can only wish them the best of luck with that. We do indeed like discovering the secrets of the ancients. Anyway, you can discover them yourselves by listening to them on the iPhone, iPod and the iPad by going and getting a hold of, yes, you guessed it, the Stone Pages app. Go along to www.stonepages.com/app. And of course, every day you'll be getting news and views from around the world, as well as articles from archaeologists who are on projects right now. So get yourself along to pasthorizons.com. That was www.pasthorizons.com. While you're there, of course, you have a chance to look at what projects and opportunities are available for you, yes, you, to get involved in. And of course, how can I not say it? If you're going to go out and do some archaeology, you're going to need the best tools. You'll also find them there on Past Horizons. Now, to myself, can I remind people that you'll find archaeological heritage employment opportunities, as well as UK Heritage Calendar, Library and Guidance section, and so much more, on my own site at Badger, www.bajr.org. And remember, more can always be found at Stone Pages, news.stonepages.com. Thanks for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you'll return again to us next week.